The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
A new report out of the UK finds that people here are looking at their phones every 12 minutes and spending about 24 hours online every week.
10 years ago, we had many different devices. We had MP3 players to listen to music. We had satellite navigation systems to take us around. Today, all of that is compacted into one device. And now 8 in 10 of us own a smartphone and really spend our entire lives on that smartphone.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was a report from the Daily Star out of the UK yesterday on the increasing numbers of digital usage. Of course, coronavirus shutdowns contributing in a big way. It's a huge factor in that increase. Surveys. There are a number of surveys that have been done that prompted about a 50 to 70% increase in internet usage during the pandemic. More than half of that time was spent on social media. You know, look, a lot of people broadcast or... Not a lot of people broadcast. I broadcast remotely. We, you know, the studios got shut down. But it'd be interesting if everybody was broadcasting from home. A lot of people worked from home, right? You probably did the same thing. So I can understand a 50 to 70% increase in internet usage. But, you know, half of that spent on social media, that's a lot. I mean, it's one of the ways I know people could stay connected. But here's the thing, and I want to talk about this a little bit. I just want to put this on your radar. You might have a child or a loved one or somebody you might be a little worried about because, you know, they're constantly in front of the screen, right? Everywhere you look today, you see two things, right? A person and a phone, and that phone is in a person's hand. I mean, I go to the airport. It used to be I'm a talker, right? I love people. Whether I'm in the store or I'm pumping gas or I'm in line at the airport, whatever it might be. I like to talk to people. I like people. People are inherently good, right? It doesn't happen that way anymore. I mean, when a bunch of people are standing around, rather than talking, everybody's on their phone, they're swiping up and down, they're looking, they're reading their news feed, they're doing whatever, right? You're sitting in the seats, the same thing. Nobody talks to anybody anymore, right? So now people do things with their phones, like write a text, you know, for their business. They check their bank account. They make their shopping list. They look at the weather. I mean, whatever. You check into your airline. I mean, I love it. I am a huge fan of my cell phone. It's attached to me like a, you know, an appendage. And I am dependent on it. I really am. But, you know, it's nice to put it down and not have it near me. When Facebook and Snapchat and a lot of those social media platforms went out the other day, they experienced withdrawal, right? And look, I feel it too sometimes. We lost power where my wife and I live. One day for like 8 hours. So you couldn't watch TV. You couldn't open your laptop. You had no access really to anything. It was kind of rough. And I said to my wife, I said, you know, remember what it was like when we grew up before there were cell phones, before there were like computers? It sounds old, I know. But I, you know, as a kid, I was out playing wiffle ball, football, soccer. I was on my bike. I was swimming. I was, you know, we never had this. You know, you'd use your landline to call somebody, right? You had a couple stations, you know, you had antenna on your TV. Very different world than it is today. And you know, I don't ever remember seeing the levels of anxiety or depression in my generation with my friends and the people that I knew. But my friends and their kids all suffer from anxiety. My friends and their kids all have depression. My friends, I mean, you take a look at your own life. How many of your kids or your grandkids or their friends have anxiety disorders or are battling depression? I think there is a connection, and I've said this before, to our digital devices and to what we're now seeing. You know, social media accounts, watching videos, playing games, unfortunately, porn, right? You know, the early exposure to porn for kids today, it's off the charts. It was never like that in my generation. You know, those latter activities have psychologists very concerned because it's doing more than just, you know, taking away innocence. It's changing the way the brain functions. It's changing the way your brain functions. Now, I know you know this, that there are natural drugs in your brain, and one of those drugs is called dopamine. It's a neurotransmitter. It's associated with pleasure. So when you do something, I don't know, like you do, you know, the particular area of your brain that registers pleasure gets flooded with dopamine and you feel the pleasure all over your body. And the problem is that it's really easy to become addicted to that pleasure and continue to seek it out. And I think that's what we're seeing today. Here's the thing with our digital devices. Now I want to go to my next guest, Dr. Leonard Sachs, who is intimately aware of the impact that these devices are having. And look, you're welcome to join me too. You might be concerned about your kids, your spouse, your loved one. Maybe you're battling this yourself. Here's the number to use, okay? It's 888-914-9149. You can get in with your question or your comment, your experience. It's always good to have you here. The thing with the digital devices, they continually hit on that pleasure point of the brain. And it's not just porn that does that. It could be anything, YouTube channels. You know, you're rebuilding castles, supercars, traditional architecture, continue scrolling through Snapchat or Instagram, seeing how many likes you have, how many followers you have, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Those things are designed in some respect to keep you coming back, to keep you hooked. Playing one video game after the other, the list goes on. So, in other words, what these addictions to digital devices are doing, they're actually addicting us to the chemicals in our own brain. And that's having, I believe, serious mental health consequences. People are becoming depressed. Even though they're more connected, they're more isolated. They feel more lonely than they've ever felt before. They're anxious. Anxiety levels are through the roof. It's crippling. I know people, young adults who are intelligent, articulate, handsome, beautiful. They got the world by the tail. Anxiety is preventing them from living life. And what else do we see here too? Suicide, right? I've heard about more accounts of suicide this year and last year than I've ever heard my entire life. How do we break it, huh? What do we do? And if you're looking for help, you want some insight, I'm glad you're listening right now because I've invited Dr. Leonard Sachs, a very gifted physician and psychologist from Exton, Pennsylvania, to join me. He's the author of a number of books. And we've talked to him in the past about this. Maybe we'll touch on some of it today. His books, you want to check him out, Why Gender Matters, Boys Adrift, Girls on the Edge, and The Collapse of Parenting are some of the great works that he's done. But you can learn more about him at LeonardSachs.com. Hey, Doc, good afternoon. Welcome back.
Thanks for inviting me.
Always good to have you here. When these stories come up, I think, gosh, we should really talk to you about it because you're both a physician, a psychologist. You've written about this. Let's talk about the brain. An interesting feature of the brain is that the centers for perception of both pain and pleasure are actually located right next to each other. What do we know about what happens to them when we engage with these digital devices?
Well, as you summarized very well, they can give you that little jolt of dopamine, and it feels good, and you want more, and you can get addicted. And you pointed out, we're not just talking about pornography here. People can get addicted to social media. And the characteristic of addiction, the defining characteristic of addiction, is not defined in terms of how much time you're spending. It's defined in terms of loss of control. And what we mean by loss of control is when you know you ought to be doing something else, but you can't stop, you can't get yourself away from the screen, then you're an addict. Mm. And you need to do an intervention. And the intervention is abstinence. You need to turn off the screen.
So let's talk about addiction for a second. Drug addiction is not new. I mean, opioids have been around for who knows how many centuries. What's so different, doctor, about this type of digital addiction? Is it different?
Well, it's different in a number of ways. One is that the toxicity is not so obvious. If you drink a fifth of liquor and a six-pack of beer, it's going to be obvious to everybody that you are drunk. But if you're addicted to a screen, you can hide that pretty well. You can hide that from yourself. You're not going to damage your liver as you would if you were an alcoholic. You're not going to die of an overdose as you might if you're a heroin addict. So you can fool others. You can fool yourself. You don't realize that you are addicted. You know, one of the saddest things that happened to me recently, I was speaking to middle school kids, and when I speak to middle school kids or high school kids, before I speak to parents, I'll warn them. I'll say, hey, I'm going to talk to some of your parents this evening. I'm going to advise them to put monitoring software on your devices to limit the amount of time you spend on your screens, to limit the amount of time you spend on social media. And an eighth grade boy raised his hand in front of the entire middle school, about 300 kids there. He raised his hand and he said, can you tell me how can I install that app on my mom's phone? And he then proceeded to tell the entire middle school how he comes home and he would like to talk to his mom. And he's trying to talk to his mom and she's looking at her phone, scrolling through her Instagram, giving distracted one-word answers. And it just broke my heart that here this boy is telling the whole middle school that his mom would rather look at Instagram than talk with her own son. She's an addict.
Wow. That's so sad. It really is sad. I think some people are addicted, Doctor. They don't even know they are. And until your power goes out or your Snapchat or Facebook or Twitter goes down, people don't like the way that feels, do they? I mean, how prevalent is this and what percentage? You may not be able to answer this, but how big of a problem do you think it is in the general population?
It's a big problem. It's very hard to put any number on it because doctors don't even agree whether it's appropriate to use the term addiction right now. I think it is. Many do. Some do not. And there's certainly no agreement as to how you're going to define that. Again, how much time you spend in front of a screen, what kind of time? I mean, if you're doing a spreadsheet for your employer, that's different than if you're scrolling through TikTok. So we don't have a good number there. But I'll tell you, it's a lot, and it's more than it was just a few years ago. It's going up very rapidly.
So how hard is it to break for those who are saying, you know, I kind of feel I spend way too much time, but I just can't do it. How hard is it, and what are the steps to get out of this destructive pattern?
Well, when I'm advising a patient, I try to distinguish between overuse and addiction. Mm-hmm. Overuse is that person who's spending too much time. It's crowding out other things. And that person might be able to cut back. The addict, though, that's characterized by loss of control. And that means that once they get started, they really can't stop. And if you're truly an addict and you know you should be going to bed or you know you should be playing with your kids and instead you're looking at a screen and you just can't stop, yeah. And that's happened more than once, then the intervention has to be abstinence, at least for a month, maybe longer. Where you don't use that screen, you don't use that app at all. You need to break your addiction.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that with you because it's very hard to do. I mean, if I'm an alcoholic, okay, I can not have a drink, right? If I'm a drug addict, I can you know, not have that drug, let's just say. I mean, it's difficult to do. I don't want to diminish how hard that is. But when it comes to digital devices, you need them. I mean, you have a phone because you need to stay connected. You have a laptop because you have a job and you've got to work, or a tablet, or you have the TV or whatever other platform you have to watch your news. How does somebody who's struggling with this give that up for a month and still be able to be productive?
You're absolutely right. It's very difficult. Now, that alcoholic who has promised accountability, who's coming with a family member or a sponsor, there's no alcohol in the house at all. If they're going to break their promise, they're going to have to go to a liquor store and buy alcohol. And the obstacles involved in buying alcohol actually make it a little easier for that ex-alcoholic to keep his promise, not to drink. And one thing we know from all kinds of research on addictions is that if you're exposed to the substance, your risk increases. So, for example, the doctors are at greater risk than the general public of becoming addicted to narcotics. And anesthesiologists are at greater risk than other doctors of becoming addicted. And the reason is an anesthesiologist is surrounded by narcotics. It's super easy for them to swipe some without anybody knowing. It's harder now than it used to be because hospitals have put a lot of barriers in place. But if it's near, if it's easy to get, it's harder to quit. And as you've just pointed out, there's nothing easier to do than turn on your phone. So yeah, it's right. A real challenge. It makes it much harder to stick to your commitment. To stay away from that app when you're using the same device for other more legitimate purposes.
Right. Well, my guest today is Dr. Leonard Sachs, and let me give you an opportunity to get in. If you want to join the conversation, maybe you have a child that's suffering with anxiety or depression. Maybe the boys are remaining, you know, more immature than they probably should be. The doctor's an expert in all these areas. We're talking today about digital addictions drowning us in dopamine and ways to find freedom from that. And of course, you can get in at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You know, I was thinking about Facebook. A lot of news has come out recently about how, you know, those platforms are terrible. For example, Instagram for girls' body image and how addictive they are in general. Facebook is apparently known and exploited the fact that people can easily become addicted to it. That's kind of their business model. They want you to spend more time and longer time and visit it more frequently to their platform. How much of what's going on in big tech, how much can we point the finger at them and say, ah, it's their fault. They're creating this addiction like a drug manufacturer. How much is our own fault as well? I mean, where do we draw the line between that?
I think there's plenty of blame to go around. I do think that the past 2 weeks has been a big tobacco moment for Facebook. And by that, I'm referring to, you and I are old enough to remember 20 years ago when the tobacco companies were claiming that there was no clear and certain evidence that cigarettes caused cancer or cigarettes caused emphysema. But they knew that they did. They had their own internal research showing very clearly that tobacco was addictive, that tobacco was caused emphysema and lung cancer, and they were lying. And that's the moment we're in right now with Facebook, that their own internal research showed clearly that Instagram is a major cause of anxiety among teenage girls, to mention the most dramatic and clear finding in their own internal research. And at the same time that they had that research, Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO, is testifying before the Senate that, oh, no, the research is, we're not persuaded that there's any clear. He was lying. He was misrepresenting his own company's internal research. So that's interesting. But look, we are human. That means we are fallen. That means we are prone to sin. You know, when I speak to parents on this topic, I always talk to them about the Lord's Prayer. The Lord's Prayer says, lead us not into temptation. It doesn't say make us strong to resist temptation. Jesus did not say that because he knew the human heart, and he knew that if you put temptation before us, we will fall. And the point in the presentation where I say that to parents is no phones in the bedroom. There must not be a phone in your kid's bedroom. When your kid is going to bed, they shouldn't have a phone in the bedroom. And, you know, I was doing this presentation at a Catholic school, and a father said, yeah, you know, Dr. Sachs, I understand what you're saying about the importance of good night's sleep and all. He said, but my daughter puts her phone in airplane mode, you know, so that she won't be awakened during the night, and then she uses her phone as her alarm clock. And then when it goes off, she wakes up and she puts her phone back in regular mode the next morning. I said, how do you know she keeps it in airplane mode? And dad was clearly offended. And he said, Dr. Sachs, you suggested my daughter would lie to me. My daughter would never lie to me. And I said, sir, I don't know you and I don't know your daughter. But I can tell you based on the research, your daughter's more likely to lie to you than to anyone else. Yeah. Because she cares what you think, because she doesn't want to disappoint you. Yeah. Don't put that stumbling block in her path. No phones in your kid's bedroom. This has to be the parent's call. It's not reasonable to put this burden in the lap of your 14-year-old daughter. What's she supposed to say tomorrow in school when her friend says, hey, I texted you last night at midnight. How can you answer? Is she supposed to say, well, researchers have found that sleep deprivation in adolescents is a major risk factor in the etiology of anxiety and depression. That's ridiculous. You can't expect a girl to talk that way. You have to allow her to say, hey, my able parents take my phone every night at nine. We'll only have it back till the next morning. At 9 o'clock at night, the latest, you take the phone from your kid, you switch it off, and you put it in the charger, which from now on is going to be in the parents' bedroom. They can have it back tomorrow morning. Yeah. Parents have to step up and take responsibility to limit kids' exposure to social media and other online temptations.
All right, well, let's do this. We'll grab a couple calls for you. We'll go to Maine. Oshin is listening to us there. Hi, Oshin.
How are you, Drew? Thanks for everything you do. It's a pleasure to be on. And thanks for all your prayers. You've done a lot for me with your prayers, and you don't even know it.
Thank you, sir.
I'm here driving my son, my 7-year-old son, to soccer, so I don't have a lot of time. But recently I heard Matt Fratt on his show on YouTube, and he was talking about this issue with phones. And I know Tim Reeve was talking about it on the radio there not so long ago either, and I'm sure I heard Patrick Madrid touch on the subject as well. Recently I downgraded my I had a Google Pixel 5, the latest and greatest, and I only had it for about 3 months, and years of smartphone use. And I had problems with my phone, many, many problems that I won't go into that right now. But I downgraded to, on Matt Fratt's advice on his show, to a phone called a Wyze phone. And it has everything in black and white, just like one of the pieces of advice Timri gave. And it all it has is text messages, phone calls, and it also has maps for when you get lost, which is really nice.
That's great.
But it's done wonders for me. I spend a lot more time with my kids. It's an absolute blessing to have something that doesn't consume all of my time like my super smartphone did in the past. So especially, I mean, for parents out there who are giving their, you know, middle schoolers, I used to teach in middle school there for 8 years. I've just moved to teach in high school, and I see these kids with those phones every single day, and they're glued to them. If you're giving your kid a phone, you're making a huge mistake.
Yep.
If you must give them a phone, find a phone, do the research, and find a phone that doesn't have apps. Get rid of the app store. Get rid of the apps. And there's only a few devices out there that do that. And the Wyze phone is one of them. They won't seem left out because it still looks like a smartphone. Their friends won't know unless they show it to them. And it has the functionality that they need, the texting and the phone calls. Best part about this phone, Drew, and get this, the best part of this phone is the messages. You cannot delete the messages. Mm-hmm. Think about that for a second. Incoming, outgoing, you can't delete anything. Now, as a middle school teacher, I've seen a bunch of things from eighth graders having police come in and talk to them about, you know, what's appropriate and what's inappropriate and what's against the law and what's not against the law in terms of what they do with their digital devices.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that you can show that there's nothing going through your phone that's not kosher.
That's right.
It's a wonderful thing, and it's been a real blessing to me. And I, shout out to Matt Fratt for the suggestion.
Amen to that. Oshin, I want to thank you for calling. I've got to take a short pause here because I'm up against the clock. But great advice for everyone. When we come back, Doctor, we can talk about what we can do to safeguard ourselves. Also, I have a theory on anxiety. I want to run it by you, Lee in Northwest Arkansas. You're on deck. We'll take all your calls. You can dial in now. We'll be right back.
The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans available at relevantradio.com/forester.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Call in now at 888-914-9149 to tell Drew what you think.
Yeah, great to be with you today. Thank you for joining me. We'll grab a few of your calls. If you're just getting plugged in, I've invited Dr. Leonard Sachs, a very gifted psychologist and physician, to join us. He's the author of a number of books. We're talking about digital addictions drowning us in dopamine, and I really do think that these are major contributors to the problems we're seeing in this next generation of kids. And Dr. Sachs, it's always good to have you here. My wife and I had given our kids cell phones when they were in high school because we wanted to be able to get in touch with them. This is when these things were becoming a lot more, you know, commonplace. In retrospect, as you're pointing out, you'd be better off probably not to do that. I want to talk about anxiety, though, and then we'll go to the phones and the connection to digital technology. I thought about when I was growing up and, you know, the fact that we didn't have this type of stuff. And I can't remember any of my friends ever having suffered with this or, you know, knowing that they were crippled by anxiety or they couldn't fulfill their vocation. And I know young kids today who are bright, handsome, or beautiful. You know, they got the world by the tail. They're educated. but their anxiety really is just absolutely crippling to them. And the one common denominator and the one factor that I've seen that has not happened in times past, it's not, you know, what they're eating or drinking. I think it's this digital technology. Your thoughts on what exposure to these tablets, these computers, these video games, now these cell phones have on the wiring in the brain, and what is it about them that would cause somebody to have, in particular, anxiety or depression?
Well, when I speak on this topic, I always try to cite the research, and we do have a lot of good, relevant research. So there has been indeed a great increase in anxiety and in loneliness, not only in the United States, but across most of the developed world in recent years. And what's striking about this is that it's not confined to people who have a smartphone. So you look at teenagers in the United States and in the UK, they're much more likely to be anxious and lonely compared to teenagers 5 or 7 years ago. And that's true across the board, including kids who don't have teens. So Gene Twenge, the professor and scholar who led this research, wondered, why is that? Why is this affecting all of the kids and not just the kids with the phones? And she says, you know, imagine a kid at school, after school, waiting to get picked up by their parents. This kid doesn't have a phone, but all her friends do. And they're all looking at their devices. You described earlier that experience of being at the airport, and everyone's on their phone. There's nobody to talk to because everyone's looking at a screen. So even if this girl doesn't happen to have a phone herself, all the other kids do. They're all looking down at their screens, and screens do not satisfy. We are hardwired for face-to-face connection. Humans need face-to-face interaction, and the phones deceive. People are scrolling through these screens, and they think they're getting connection. But to think that you're getting connection from looking at a phone is to think that you're getting fed by looking at a menu. It doesn't satisfy. It's deceptive. And we need not only to turn off the phones, but to restore real human connection.
Well, my guest today is Dr. Leonard Sachs. Doctor, let's take a few phone calls for you here, too. All right, let's go to who's up next? Lee in Northwest Arkansas. Lee, good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. I guess I'm starting to become a regular caller here. Hey, I just wanted to say I think a good analogy for this would be an eating disorder because, you know, you can eat good food or you can eat junk food. And unlike an alcohol addiction or a drug addiction, which can be cut out completely, you can't cut it out completely, just like you can't cut out food completely. We have to have it for work. We have to have it for school or, you know, whatever. But it's all got to do with moderation and the quality of the content that you consume. You know, if you eat too much junk food, you're going to become obese, overweight, unhealthy. Just like if you consume too much Facebook and Instagram and things like that, you're going to become mentally unhealthy. At the same time, you know, what if you're using, I mean, on my phone, I've got the Relevant Radio app, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got, you know, spiritual apps and Bible apps and, you know, things like that. I've got conversion apps, but those are all, you know, what would I put in the category of good food?
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Sure. Let me let the doctor respond to you, Lee. Good to hear from you again. Doctor, go right ahead.
I think that's a very good point. And others have pointed out that Facebook is to human interaction like cotton candy is to vegetables. And it doesn't mean you can't have any, but you shouldn't have much. Most of your human interaction should be with real people. Maybe there's room, if you're not an addict, for a little bit of social media, but you need to limit and govern how much you're using. Just as your cotton candy should not be your main course, it might be a small dessert, your social media should not be the main thing you're doing with your device. A device is a tool. As Lee pointed out, it can be used well or badly. You can use it to listen to Relevant Radio, or you can use it to scroll through TikTok.
That's so true. All right. Well, you know, you can join us if you want. I'll go back to the phones in a second at 888-914-9149. I'm just curious. What do parents do for the kids who are suffering from anxiety or for depression right now? Is it too late? Have their brains already been rewired? If they gave their kids, let's say, cell phones, or they had tablets or computers, or, you know, they're young adults now. I mean, what do you do for somebody who has suffering from, you know, this crippling disorder right now? And if it was this cell phone and this dopamine, you know, that has helped to trigger all that?
Well, the parents need to get in front of this, and it takes some courage, because you're going to need, as I said earlier, to limit and govern and guide what your kids are doing with their devices. And that means, that begins, as I said earlier, no devices in the bedroom. And some parents will really push back hard when I say that. One parent said to me, oh, my daughter would totally freak out if I didn't let her take her phone to bed. Well, come on, this is your job as a parent. If your daughter is anxious and depressed and not sleeping at night, you got to take the phone. And again, I wrote a book called The Collapse of Parenting. And one of the points I make in that book is that some parents are just not stepping up. They're just not doing their job.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, that's kind of the bottom line here. I mean, as parents, I know we're busy. I know you're hard. It's hard to do everything from homework to, you know, provide for your family. But you're right, Doctor. I mean, we live in a very different time, and parents have got to do their job. You've written a couple different books. I want to talk to you about something else, just to change gears for a quick moment here. Last time you were on, it was a couple weeks ago, I think, we talked about less men going to college. And I'd seen a story right after you and I had talked about a New York professor that says that fewer men who are going to college is, you know, going to lead now to a mating crisis, with the U.S. producing too many, what they're calling broke and alone men. What do you see happening in the culture today? Women, as we talked about, make up to 60% of U.S. college enrollees right now. That was the Wall Street Journal that had that stat. But the gap between men and women enrolled in college, it's dwindling. And this professor, a guy named Scott Galloway, says, look, it's not just education, it's not just the workforce, it's a mating crisis. And I think there's probably a lot of women listening right now who are saying, you know what, you're right, I'm having trouble finding a good man. Your thoughts on his comments and this male crisis that we're having?
Well, absolutely. I want to correct what you just said. You said the gap is dwindling. The gap is not dwindling. The gap is getting bigger.
Widening is what I should. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Women.
I misspoke. Widening.
I think you just misspoke. Yeah.
Yeah. The gap between men and women is widening.
But getting back to the screens and how it ties into this topic, we got more and more women who are spending their free time looking at social media, and more men who are spending their free time playing video games and shooting the enemy in Call of Duty and Grand Theft Auto. And the common ground that they have to talk about is that's dwindling, because there's no longer any shared experience. Those young men who are excited to talk about Call of Duty and Grand Theft Auto and RDR2, well, the woman doesn't even know what RDR2 is, let alone have a conversation about it or care about it. So a young man, a young woman from the same home, same parents, are now living in different worlds. She's looking at TikTok and Instagram. He's looking at Grand Theft Auto and playing RDR2, and they have nothing to talk about.
Yeah, it's tragic, really. But is it really just that? I mean, so they have different interests that's really keeping, that's creating a mating crisis. Are men not maturing?
No.
I guess that's what I'm getting at. I mean, it's like, okay, so the guys like to play video games and women don't. Is that really enough to keep them from going out and finding other common ground? Or is there a crisis with male maturity today? I don't know.
I think there's, of course, the video games is just one piece of it. I mentioned my book, Boys Adrift, the subtitle, The Five Factors Driving the Growing Epidemic of Unmotivated Boys and Underachieving Young Men. Video games are one of those factors. But another big factor is the culture. The culture no longer offers men good role models, hardworking men of virtue. You don't find that in Drake or Bruno Mars or Eminem. And a man, a boy needs a man. A boy needs to see a good man to become a good man. And our culture used to offer that. We used to have role models like Gary Cooper, Paul Newman, Sidney Poitier. Now we've got Akon, Eminem, 50 Cent, Bruno Mars, and Drake. It's really a collapse in the social construction of masculinity.
That's really true. You know, I also had seen a story about a shift in the American family values. I mean, that both parents and adult children, you know, we live in a very different time than, you know, I think of my father's generation. He's an Italian, right? His father was an immigrant, my grandfather. And Sundays, there were big Italian dinners. There was homemade pasta. There's all that. And then, of course, he has me. We're the next generation. Of course, we always had a strong family life. But today, you know, the rules of family life seem to have changed over the past half a century, if you will. And kids are moving away. Life, both parents are working in a lot of cases. Give me your take on what's happening within the family as well, because that also affects, yeah, I think, this next generation of how men are formed, how women are formed, ultimately the roles, yeah, that they assume. But give me your take on that.
From UCLA, where they followed families around, and a mother, father, son, and daughter return to their home, and they find within 5 minutes each family member is in a different room of the house looking at a different screen. You can't have a family life if the family is not together. And I tell parents, no screens. When the family's together, you put your screens away and you talk to each other. You need to prioritize the family. Kids having supper with their parents used to be common in the United States. It's now uncommon. Yeah. Fewer than half of American teenagers report having supper with a parent in the last 24 hours. That's, wow, really unhealthy. You got to fight for supper at home with your kids.
Wow. You know, to this point, I do want to talk about it with you just briefly here. We'll take a few calls. I have a few moments left with Dr. Sachs today. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. In fact, let me take a break here. When we come back, I want to talk about what's happening. There's a lot of estrangement between parents and their children today. And kids remember their childhood very differently than perhaps the way they were raised. And, you know, parents don't seem to be able to connect with their kids, maybe even empathize with the damage that kids might have had growing up. So we'll talk about that as well. If you want to get in, it's our last chance. I'll go to the phones in a second to join Dr. Leonard Sachs. You can dial in now, 888-914-9149.
The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans available at relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Connect with Drew
at 888-914-9149.
Yeah, that's the number. 888-914-9149. You can get in with Dr. Sachs, a gifted psychiatrist or psychologist and a physician in Exton, Pennsylvania. You can learn more about him, too, in the books he wrote at leonardsachs.com. And we are talking right now about a whole myriad of things. So I'll take your calls in a second. But, Doctor, I just want to pick up on another issue. We've talked about digital dopamine and addiction. We've talked about anxiety and depression with kids. We've talked about men, you know, putting off marriage and women not finding commonality in school and a whole litany of other things. But I want to zoom out a little bit further, too, because we talked about the family as well. There was an article in The Atlantic I saw, I think it was last week, and there was a woman who wrote a book called When Parents Hurt. And she talked about how when her practice was filled with mothers and fathers who want help healing the distance with their adult children and learning how to cope with the pain of losing them. And she says, look, I treat adult children who are estranged from their parents, and some of those adult children want no contact because their parents have behaved in ways that were maybe rejecting or abusive or whatever. But she says to make matters worse for the children and for themselves, some parents don't, you know, they don't empathize. You know, they don't have this empathy for the damage they cause. Sometimes they don't see it. Sometimes the kids have it wrong, you know. And today we have, and I was surprised at the stat. I think I saw a show over the weekend that talked about this, where the division between parents and children, or division within the family, is really high. What are you seeing with estrangement between parent and adult children because they seem to look at the past and the present through very different eyes.
Yeah, there's always been tensions between generations, but I do think it's taken, it's going in the wrong direction. I certainly see a great many parents who are estranged from their adult children, and there's so often so much bitterness and confusion, and the mother will say, I sacrificed everything for my son, and now he wants nothing to do with me. And sometimes it's because there was always a problem with communication, and she felt that she was doing the best for him by pushing him to go to the best schools and to do his homework, but he wanted to go a different route. Your kid is not your clone, and you have to respect that they have their own agenda, and they may want something different from what you want for them, and they may want something different from what you think is best for them. And at some point, you have to respect the fact that your child is going to be the captain of their own ship. And you can be the safe harbor, but they're going to have to sail that ship out on the ocean.
That is really, really well said. I love the way you said that. All right, Debbie's listening in West Chicago. Debbie, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. I am right on that subject right now. My 25-year-old son is about to move out on his own with a friend, and we are at a crossroads right now. How do I and I respect his decisions, and he's an adult now, and my husband and I have always supported him and what he's done, and he's ready to fly the coop, and we are 100% with him. My question is, how do I establish that relationship of, you know, we've always had our boys' family dinners were always important to us, to me. I love to cook for my family. How, as an adult child, do I establish that connection to keep the tradition going where he can come back home, like maybe once a week? Or, I mean, how do I have that conversation with him?
I think it depends a lot on where your son's going to be and what his agenda are. If he's has a girlfriend or a wife, you want to show her the greatest respect and make sure that that woman knows that she is welcome in your home. And be patient. Young men especially sometimes need to go out and find their own path. But if you make it clear that I love you, we're here for you, we welcome you, in the great majority of cases, he will return, and you can establish those rituals as an adult. And there's so much rewarding back and forth between parents and adult children, because now they're adults, and you can really talk in a way that you couldn't maybe when they were 9 or 14 years old.
Good luck, Debbie. It'll work out. It will. You're a good mom. Just always be there.
It's really hard right now. Yeah.
Well, you know, have
really
dinner
hard
on Sundays.
Right now, hey, transition.
No, I know. I can imagine. You and your husband are going to love it, though. I'm sure you'll settle in. But like I said, be there. Make sure that you spend time with your children, because time goes quickly. It really does. I mean, I have adult children now, too. And unless you really say, hey, why don't you come over for dinner tonight, or let's get together this weekend or whatever, those weeks can rapidly turn into a month before you know it. Mary's in St. John, Minnesota. She wants to get in with you, too, doctor. Hi, Mary. Good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go right ahead, Mary.
My question is, how do you discern how many activities to allow your children to be in? Because you want them to be in activities and, you know, to be able to do things, but at the same time, you have to have the balance of family life, like you were talking about, and family dinners and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Good question.
Okay, I love that question, because that's a major focus of my book, The Collapse of Parenting. And one of the points I make there is that parents must prioritize the family. And I see so many parents who are picking up their kids from school and driving them to computer coding class and then driving them to soccer practice, and the parent and the child are literally eating a sandwich. Supper is a sandwich on the way from computer coding class to soccer. And the unintended message the unintended message those parents are sending is that being amazing at doing lots of stuff is more important than time at home with family. Don't send that message. It's really toxic. Kids already feel tremendous pressure to perform and to be amazing. Cut back on the activities. Prioritize the family. Cancel the play date. Cancel computer coding class. Make time for a family supper instead. The research is very strong that if you want to improve the odds for your kids, decrease the risk of them being anxious and depressed, cut back on activities, and make more time for a family supper, we've got good data on that. You will greatly decrease your kids' risk of anxiety and depression.
And you can find Dr. Leonard Sachs's book. It's called Collapse of Parenting, The Collapse of Parenting. You can go to his website, leonardsachs.com, or do a quick search for it. I want to sneak in another call here. This is from Patricia. She got a question about birth control. You're an MD, so I want your take on this. Patricia, go right ahead.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
We can. You got to make it quickly, though, Patricia. Thank you.
I know you have had people on your show, Drew, that spoke to that issue about how it destroys families. And I wondered, you know, if the doctor had something about that, because it deals with, I'm thinking of Vicki Thorne talking about the fertile pheromones and the whole macaque monkey study, that birth control totally destroyed that community of macaque monkeys. And how women don't have fertile pheromones if they're on the pill, which affects the men's testosterone levels to make them more manly. And this may be a biological thing as well as communication, some of these other things as well.
That's a great point, Patricia. I love that. And, Doctor, yeah. I'm sure a lot of listeners aren't even aware of those studies that she referred to. We'll have to revisit that on this show. Yeah. But I'll let you respond to her right now. We only got a couple of moments.
Yeah, the caller is making an excellent point, which is that birth control pills do a lot more besides stop ovulation. They also change the woman's sensory experience. So, for example, what kind of odor in a man, to be blunt, does a woman find attractive? It turns out that changes radically depending whether or not she's on a birth control pill. So a woman, say, is dating a man while she's on the birth control pill and finds him attractive, then she goes off the pill, she may find him unattractive. Yeah. A man's odor is very important in male-female relations, and if a woman finds a man's odor unappealing, it's going to be very hard to sustain that relationship. So birth control pills are doing a lot of weird things that we're only really beginning to fully understand how they change many things about how a woman perceives another man.
Well, Doctor, I'll have to do a whole show on that. It's a fascinating one. I'm going to mark that down. But I'm out of time for the day. I want to thank you for being here with us. And again, people can check you out. I guess the best way to connect is your website, right? LeonardSachs.com?
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, Doctor, thanks for so much time, for your expertise, and for contributing as often as you do. I always appreciate our conversations.
Yeah, thank you again. I also want to mention Girls on the Edge has a chapter on how those hormones are messed up by a lot of modern technology.
Well, we'll have to bring you back. Let's talk about that as well. All right, Doc, thanks. Got to leave it there. That's Dr. Leonard Sachs. God bless you. Dr. Leonard Sachs, and check him out, leonardsachs.com. I am out of time for the day. Before I wrap it up, though, I just want to give you a quick heads up. Relevant Radio is offering to you, and I hope you'll take advantage of this. Use your smartphone, use your tablet, use your computer, whatever way. We have these beautiful hand-painted outdoor nativity sets we want to give away free. All right, 200 of them, thanks to a very generous donor. They're valued at about $500. All you got to do is go to relevantradio.com/Christmas and sign up. I have one of these. It was given to me when I first joined the network. They're beautiful. So go sign up. RelevantRadio.com/Christmas. Until our paths again cross, remember, God loves you, and so do I. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Hope restored. Hearts healed. Lives changed. Here's another miracle moment on Relevant Radio.
Dan is in Chicago. He was unemployed when he first gave. Can't wait to hear his story. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I was just going to say that when I started listening to Relevant Radio, I was pretty much a confused Protestant individual who believed in God, but I really didn't have a direction. I didn't have a church. I had been shunned by one. I was confused completely by the other. And as I was going to these Protestant churches, I went with my wife to a Catholic church. And it seemed to me I was getting more truth in the Catholic church, even though I didn't want to be part of it. than I did in the Protestant churches. And so I guess I wanted to do a little bit of research, and my in-laws had this Relevant Radio bumper sticker. So I started listening. I started to understand. And I came into the church, and eventually I began giving to Relevant Radio. At the time, I was still unemployed. I gave $15, $5 for each of my children, so that they might have the same opportunity and same resource for Catholic knowledge that I did. And then when I look at it and I see that, what was it, St. Philomena said to St. John Vianney, there is nothing more precious than the salvation of souls. So there's so many reasons to give. If I was to tell you one thing, or to each listener, humble yourself. Just humble yourself and do it. Because when you humble yourself, you take those steps towards God. So I appreciate your help and all the donors before me and after me. And what a wonderful apostle. Thank you so much.
This miracle moment was brought to you by you.
Call and donate now. Please help Relevant Radio continue to give our Lord a platform on the air and across the web.
Ask about making a recurring gift.
1-877-291-0123. Donate safely and quickly online at relevantradio.com or by using the Relevant Radio app.